Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. Dr. Julian White has spent more than 50 years at Florida A&M University, first as a student and then as band director. At almost every milestone in the band's history, from the 1989 Bastille Day Parade in France to winning the prestigious Sudler Award, playing Super Bowls and inaugural parades, White has been there at every high step along the way. Step in the Name of Love, a song by R. Kelly performed by the Marching 100 under the direction of Dr. Julian White. At 71 years old, White was going strong, directing, organizing, and planning future performances. But all of that came to a standstill after the hazing death of drum major Robert Champion back in November. FAMU officials immediately fired White, claiming he was incompetent in handling accusations of hazing in the program. But they ended up placing him on administrative leave to avoid disrupting ongoing investigations. Since then, White had spent several months fighting to keep his job. But in the midst of it all, he suddenly announced he was going to retire. And that's where we are now. I was offered an opportunity to interview White the morning after his retirement announcement.
My morning has really been pretty exciting. I've been in interviews since 10:15.
Wow.
Very exciting.
Well, welcome to It's About Florida. Thanks for taking this time to sit down and chat with me about your career. We're here. You just announced you're retiring.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, I'm retiring because I have a wonderful family. I have a beautiful, loving, and caring wife. I have an adorable 8-year-old son. I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter. I have a 15-year-old grandson. I have 2 adult daughters and brother, and really just a large family. And I have, you know, I've been teaching now pretty close to 50 years. And I'm accustomed to the pressures, the daily, the rigors of, you know, of the job, both from a physical standpoint of view as well as mentally. You know, sometimes it can be a mental strain. But I've developed a kind of personality, I guess, that I'm able to swim in hot grease. But I don't want to inflict that kind of thing, subject my family to that kind of thing. And when I don't know what I'm going to read in the newspaper the next morning, I don't know if there's going to be a news flash regarding the Florida A&M band and Dr. Julian E. White, and my son is here. My son is in 8th grade, but he reads very well. So, second grade, he's 8 years old. He's 8 years old in second grade, and so he could read the newspaper. And so I have to hide the newspaper from him every day. And that kind of thing, I just thought it was getting, it was unfair for me to continue to lobby, to receive my, to be reinstated on my job at the expense of this kind of adverse publicity to my family.
And I should note, we're here in your wonderful home.
Well, thank you very kindly.
We're sitting here and I'm looking around and I see all of these awards, the Marching 100,
yes.
That pillow in the corner,
yes.
And your family,
yes.
is
yes.
around you right now.
Absolutely.
How's that support been during this time?
Very much so. You know, I've been fortunate in that I had a very fine career. I graduated from Florida A&M University in 1963. Actually, I graduated in 1962. I was kind of fortunate in that I worked hard. I graduated a semester early. So, and I was drum major at the Florida A&M University Band. I moved on to teach for 10 years at William Raines High School in Jacksonville, Florida. In fact, this coming Thursday, they're going to name the music wing, the fine arts wing at the school in my name. It will be called the Dr. Julian E. White Fine Arts Wing. And so that's a distinguished an award recognition for me. You asked the question, so I'll continue to answer. In my career, I think at the university that I received just about every award they give: the Teacher of the Year, the Distinguished Professor Award, the Advanced Teacher Award, the Teacher Recognition, and so I've done quite a bit with that. I am a member of the American Bandmasters Association, which is a premier organization for band directors. Only a select few band directors in the nation are members of that organization. Most recently, I was awarded the Kappa Kappa Psi Lifetime Distinguished Achievement Award. This award was first presented to John Philip Sousa, and you may not be a musician, but you've heard John Philip Sousa before. And so he was the first. And until they do another one this year, I'm the last to ever see that award. So, you know, those kind of things are very you mentioned the pictures and the kind of thing. Those are the kind of things that sustain me, because band and music is my life. And so to have those kind of recognitions really, they bring a great source of gratification to me. it's music. You know, it's a musical home.
Musical interlude. Along with numbers composed by John Philip Sousa, the Marching 100 is known for its performance of traditional marches, like this Barnum and Bailey march by Carl L. King. So, speaking of music, looking back to your time, 40 years, mm-hmm. and out of that, all the performances that you looked over, what stands out?
You know, if I said everything, that would be ridiculous. But, you know, I have, we were featured on Game Day USA 2 years ago. We were featured with the Grammys, at the Grammys. We did the halftime Super Bowl with Prince. We have done two more Super Bowls under my direction, and then with Dr. Foster, he did, and I was assistant at the time, two Super Bowls. So we've done about five Super Bowl performances. 2 years ago, we were featured on the CBS Evening News 6:30 report with Katie Couric. That was prime time for the nation. They did an expose on myself and the band. Of course, the unforgettable performance in Paris, France for the French Bicentennial. We received an invitation this year to perform in Carnegie Hall. We would in New York's Carnegie Hall. We would have been the first HBCU band to do so. Unfortunately, the band suspension precluded us making that performance. So, you know, you look at some of the things on the wall, you see the formation I have over there of Michael Jackson with his face on it right after his death. That was really a highlight performance for us because of the greatness of Michael Jackson, and we were able to convey that greatness to the audience. So there are just so many things. I only have wonderful memories to carry me through this retirement period of my tenure at Florida A&M University. And even though I wasn't ready to retire, age-wise I am, but I think I'm a young 71 now. And so even though I wasn't ready to retire, you know, sometimes you get messages, and I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And, you know, sometimes we make decisions of what we want to do, and God decides otherwise. And I've always said, even though it's a kind of a common language when I said God has this, but I think God had this throughout. And my decision to retire, I think, was led by God's thoughts.
Tell me more about that, because when I saw the announcement, saw the press release and mm-hmm. all that, that you mm-hmm. were stepping down, just looking back, seeing you vigorously fighting mm-hmm. to keep this job mm-hmm. and continue on, mm-hmm. what triggered to say, no more, this is enough?
The adverse publicity. It wasn't getting better. It was getting worse. And, you know, wherein, yes, I felt that I should have been reinstated on the job. In fact, I didn't think I should have been terminated from the very beginning. I wish that the university would have allowed me to work with them to eradicate the problem rather than go through the process of shifting the blame, who's responsible for this and who's responsible for that. Ultimately, there were some problems that needed to be corrected. So the adverse publicity precipitated my decision to retire and just to end that kind of pressure that my family would had to undergo. It was pressure on me also, but as I said, I tend to be able to swim in hot grease, and I know that almost sounds impossible, but sometimes some of the things we have to go through on it is impossible. Mm-hmm. So that precipitated the latest publicity regarding students not being enrolled in school, not being enrolled in the band class, and whose fault it is. I admit my culpability in some way, that there are some things that I should have caught. But being a faculty member, not at the administrative level to make the kinds of decisions regarding, let's say, if we're going to give per diem funds to students, somebody should check that beyond the band director, beyond me saying I need a per diem for 400 people. Nobody should be able to do that. And to say that I have the ultimate responsibility and ability, control to do that is just not true. And so when I submit a list of for lack of a better term, 400 names, I submit that to the athletic department. Mm-hmm. Then the athletic department sends it to the controller's office, and the controller issues a check for this. And so when that check is issued, the, you know, checks and balances and just financial accounting says that you should verify who these funds are being given to and that they are, in fact, eligible to receive them. And so that was not done. And this is why the adverse publicity comes up to say, well, whose fault was it? Was it the band director's fault? Was it the university's fault? And I don't like to see that kind of controversy at my beloved university. I just wish that we could have worked together to eradicate and solve those kind of problems.
And those problems that you were speaking of came as a result of the death, or it was highlighted.
Because of the death
of Robert Champion. What can you tell me about Mr. Robert Champion?
Robert Champion was a very fine student. He was an excellent musician. And he had attempted to be a drum major two times. They have to qualify. They have to go through interviews in order to be selected as a drum major. And so Robert did that, and the third time he was successful. He was a very fine, as I mentioned, a very fine musician. And I had made the decision, in my mind, had made it public, that Robert was going to be the head drum major this year. And that shows the amount of respect and love that I had for Robert Champion. Unfortunately, the hazing that resulted in death did not allow that to happen. But he was just a wonderful person, and I continue to grieve. And myself, that'll be a part of my prayers, remembering Robert Champion for the rest of my life, and just to imagine that the agony that his parents may feel having lost a son.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tremel Gomes, talking with longtime Florida A&M band director Julian White. He says mounting troubles with the band following the hazing death of drum major Robert Champion has led him to step aside and seek retirement. But just how deep was the hazing problem in the band? Let's get back to the interview. There's a lot of talk that hazing is part of the culture in the Marching 100. Can you explain that? Like, is this part of the culture of the Marching 100 to go through that process of getting that coveted position of being a drum major or being the section leader? What do you
mean? No, it's not. And I would first have to say the culture of hazing is not peculiar to Florida A&M University. It's a culture in the country. Middle schools, high schools, colleges, universities, bands, fraternities, sororities, clubs, military. This thing about having to prove your worth in order to be a part and to be accepted by a group of individuals. I was a drum major at Florida A&M University back in the early 60s, and I wasn't hazed. I didn't haze. That is not something that's a part of my mentality, and so I would not allow myself to be hazed, nor would I haze. Now, but we talk about the culture. So when we have these beliefs that in order for you to prove yourself that you're going to have to go through some rite of passage, and so that's not peculiar with Florida A&M University. It's a It's a problem, I think, that's in American society. And unfortunately, for Florida A&M, it took the death of a person to augment and amplify the fact that hazing needs to be completely eradicated. All vestiges of hazing need to be completely eradicated. I sent a letter. I guess it must have been in the early 70s or 80s. I sent a letter. I formed a task force because a student at Morris Brown College was killed as a result of hazing. And I stressed at that time that I was concerned that something like that could happen at Florida A&M University.
Why were you concerned that that would happen at Florida A&M?
Because I knew that there were problems with hazing. And I was on a mission, even at that time, to eradicate hazing. And so I knew that that could possibly happen at Florida A&M. So I suggested that we form a task force, and we did, to study hazing, to develop a methodology of eliminating hazing. And we did that. However, 20 years later, 30 years later, what I said could possibly happen at Florida A&M did happen, and that is a band member died as a result of hazing.
As you said, you put out efforts. You were proactive,
yes,
after seeing,
yes,
the incident at the other university. Why is it that it goes away, the crackdown? You crack down on it to eliminate it out of your organization, but it creeps back in. Looking back, like, what did you see? What was bringing it back in, and what could you have done, if anything?
Well, I think something can be done. And if I had remained as director of bands, these would have been some of the recommendations that I would have made. If a student is involved in hazing, that they be not suspended from the band, they'd be expelled from the university and not allowed to continue. I think that sometimes we get into the posture of when a person is guilty, found guilty, we say they had a clean record. We're going, and that, you know, that's in our justice system, that, you know, we're going to put them on probation, we're going to do these kind of things, and then we have repeat offenders. Well, I think that if we would be more stringent in administering discipline for and punishment for crime for infractions related to hazing, that the message would get there that hazing is not going to be tolerated. Expel the students. And so that kind of thing, I think in an effort of rehabilitation and to help, just as the justice system has probation, these kind of things, that in our efforts to do those things, that the proper authorities did not implement stringent punishments for hazing.
Could you have been more strict? I understand, like, some of the people you suspended, you let back in.
No. Very few. The last group of individuals who were suspended were cleared by the university. However, I did not allow them to return to the band. I did not allow them to make the trip to the Florida Classic, even though they've been cleared of any wrongdoing by the university. And so, no, there may have been, I would say, no more than five in my career that I allowed to return after having been convicted of hazing. And I allowed them to return, and the success rate for those individuals who I did allow to return is 100%, that they were able to graduate and be productive members of the band and productive citizens. However, in the future, if I had been there, I wouldn't allow even those five to return. If you commit that kind of crime, then to me, that's a life or death sentence. You would not be allowed to return. That's what I would have implemented.
You felt that you should not have been fired when President Ammons made that call, and you fought vigorously to stay on board.
Yes.
Why do you not think you should have taken the heat for this, the hot grease?
Right. Well, I didn't think so because we had a death by hazing. We didn't have a death by hazing because of the negligence of Dr. Julian E. White. We had a death by hazing because students violated. They planned to have this hazing ritual on bus C, and so I could not have prevented it because I had no knowledge that it would have occurred, that it was going to occur. And so to dismiss me without a hearing, after all, I was a full tenure professor, to dismiss me without a hearing and to dismiss me on the grounds of incompetence as related to not reporting incidents of hazing when I produced over 150 pages of documentation that I did, in fact, report incidents of hazing. So to terminate me on the grounds that I was incompetent and did not report hazing incidents was just not true.
Mm-hmm. You're now here as we wrap up, moving on. What's the next step for you? And what do you say for this institution? Do you think the band will be reinstated?
I think the band will eventually be reinstated. As to when, that's a different question. If you didn't ask me my opinion as to whether or not it should, so I won't give it.
What do you think?
Okay, you're asking me, and I will give it. I think that at this point, it would not be prudent to reinstate the band. And I say that with the greatest amount of respect and admiration for all of the supporters of the Marching 100, those who love and support it financially, and that the fact that the ban was suspended indefinitely, and we have missed some performances, and I don't know if it was with you or whoever else that I mentioned, that we have not been suspended from the most crucial elements of the band's performance. And those would be the Saturday football halftime shows. And if we're going to send a statement to the world, to the nation, the United States, and to academia, that hazing will not be tolerated at Florida A&M University, not at the expense of, say, the band really holding the public hostage, we can do what we want to do. And you're going to forgive us, and you're going to accept us on Saturday, even though we're going to haze students. But you say that we you want us to perform. And again, I say that with all the respect for my great public and the supporters. But we need to take a stand to say that the end does not always justify the mean. The end being the performance on Saturday. But the justification for that being, we're going to accept hazing and we're going to not hold you accountable for it.
While it has a history of great performances, mm-hmm. it has a history of, like, you know, bad behavior mm-hmm. under the scenes. Mm-hmm. How much of that responsibility do you take or should be taken by the staff that you oversaw?
I think that it's a shared responsibility, and with the staff, myself, the university. But I do need to clarify, we don't have a reputation of bad behavior. Our discipline in the band is very good.
The
problem is the hazing aspect, and that's just ongoing. To say that we have improved, I mean, when I came to Florida A&M University, hazing was rampant. I mean, it was just all over the place. It was taking place on campus visibly in certain areas of the university. And I fought. And I really got it down. Thought I had it down pat. Thought I had it completely eliminated. But obviously something did happen. And so that's this death was the result of it. But the band has good conduct. However, the hazing was and is an ongoing problem, and we hope that that will be the end of it.
So this is it. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me here on It's About Florida. We're here in your nice home, so this is where you're going to be spending most of your time?
Well, some of it. I'm going to travel. I'm going to take my son to various parts of the United States, to, you know, Washington, other historical monuments, Niagara Falls, and places that he wants to go, Mount Everest, those kind of things. And so that's where we'll go.
All right. Thank you very much for taking time to speak with me here on It's About Florida.
My pleasure.
Thank you to our guest, Dr. Julian White, former director of Florida A&M University's famed Marching 100. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Production assistance provided by Regan McCarthy and Lynn Hatter, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.